Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
1206, Elisa Jaffe in this week for Ken Schramm. And boy, do we have a potpourri of great topics for you this afternoon. We've got the presidential race. It's heating up. Why you need to start standing up if you want to live longer. What do you do if your kids tell you they want a pet or you've got a one-year-old whining to get a cat or a dog? You know what? You might want to listen to them if you want your child to be a healthier child. And how bad is it behind the scenes of Microsoft? We're going to hear from a couple who claim they were bullied and had their creativity stifled because of the way things roll at Microsoft. But first, there's a new poll out that shows it is dead even. Dead even in the race for the White House. It's a survey that shows there's also a really pretty big difference in motivation between the people who are supporting President Barack Obama and the people who are supporting his challenger, Mitt Romney. So this new ABC News Washington Post poll that just came out today shows that if the election were held right now, let's just say you were going to the polls today, 47% of the registered voters around the country say they would vote for the president. But another 47% say they would vote for Mitt Romney. So this is just a dead heat between these two. And it's, you know, there have been so many polls recently. We've seen, you know, lots of ABC News and Washington Post polls over the last few weeks. And we're hearing how this is really, this gap is tightening up between the two candidates. But now there's a gap that is widening when it comes to motivation. A lot of the people who are supporting President Obama say their vote is for him, with just 23% saying they're voting against Romney. So if three quarters of Obama supporters say their vote is for him and 23% say they're voting against Romney, only 37% of Romney supporters say their vote is for their candidate. And, you know, it's just the same kind of thing we saw when John Kerry and George Bush were running together. And now this new poll has people saying, uh-oh, what's going to happen? What does this mean when we've got the money tightening up for the candidates and we've got the numbers tightening up? ABC's Ann Compton has been following this. And let's go into the meaning of this poll. Ann, you follow the president every day. What is his camp saying this poll means?
Well, this is an interesting poll because this is a real head-to-head horse race poll. You and I have talked many times before about some of the other polls, the ones that are, you know, on issues or on preferences. But this is an honest-to-gosh horse race poll. And what it's doing is laying out where the first of all, that it's a dead heat. 47% for President Obama, 47% to Mitt Romney. And if you look back for the last year, they haven't varied very far from that. So it shows that while there's a little bit of volatility in the middle, basically this is a head-to-head race.
What has changed things in the recent weeks? Is it the, you know, the health care, the Affordable Health Care Act?
Actually, no. And it hasn't changed. The two of them are still so close together. But this is where some of the other more interesting information in the polls that are often down near the bottom, some interesting things. Number one, job performance is still a problem for President Obama. There are more people who say they disapprove of his job on the economy and health care than approve of it. For Governor Romney, his problem is likability, if you can believe it, that a significant larger number say that they like President Obama. They find him likable. 63% find President Obama likable. Only 27% find Governor Romney likable. So both candidates have to look at this poll and find something to be a little concerned about.
But it shows there's a little bit of apathy, too, that people have really already decided what they're going to do.
Actually, the poll also went into that. There is a significant percentage in the middle who said there's a good chance they might change their mind. What would it take to do that? Well, when you look at those who say that what they're looking at in this election is how have we come through the last 4 years, those people are very strongly in favor of Governor Romney. But when those voters who were polled say what they're really looking at is what will happen in the next 4 years, they're very pro-Obama. So you're seeing sides choose it, but it is by no means cemented in place. And in the years that I have covered presidential politics, I think toward the end, the last month or so, you always see it tighten somewhat.
ABC's Ann Compton with us talking about the presidential race tightening. It does it break it down, Ann? I was looking at some of it, and then I ran in here so that I could grab you on the air. I'm wondering, does it break it down to what happens in the swing states and how the voters feel?
It does not. And this is a national poll. This takes on the kind of coast-to-coast, big-picture issues. But as you rightly point out, this is not a nation that elects its presidents on a total popular vote. They elected on electoral votes, and that's why President Obama is spending all day today in Iowa. Governor Romney is spending all today in Colorado, a swing state he hasn't visited since May, and while all of them are concentrating on the smaller states like New Hampshire and southern states like Virginia and North Carolina, which are larger states. The president's going to spend 2 full days in Virginia on Friday and Saturday of this week. That's because they're looking for that roadmap to how do you get to 270 electoral votes come election day.
But doesn't Obama already lead Romney in Virginia? I thought he had a pretty comfortable lead there.
I don't believe it's a comfortable lead in Virginia. He does have something of a lead in North Carolina. Pennsylvania, I think they've kind of put on the sidelines now because the president's doing a little bit better there. But Ohio, places like that, Nevada, those are all places where neither side is going to either stop the advertising or stop the campaign visits because they think that is what will motivate their bases to get up and to get out and to vote.
Okay, so a poll like this is done, and we all glom onto it because, you know, it's fascinating to us in the media or, you know, just folks reading about it at home. What do the campaign people do when they see these kinds of numbers? You see them scramble?
That's a really good question. They don't scramble and panic because they're 4 months out, but what they do is read way down into the fine print and find out why it is that some voters who say they're really worried about the future, why they tend to be Obama voters. They look down and say, well, why if these people are this income level or if they are first-time voters, why are they looking at Romney? So they go in and they try to read the tea leaves all the way down to the very bottom of the cup.
So much to break down on these kinds of polls. Are we going to be overwhelmed with them by the time the election comes around in 4 months?
Well, of course we are. You're going to be drowning in them. And that's why my recommendation is don't look. This is a snapshot poll. This is a horse race poll, nose to nose. We do not have to look at those every day. You'll see tons of them. But what I like to watch are the tracking polls, which say today, Tuesday, this is where the president was, but look at where he's gone since last Friday or over the time the Supreme Court acted. Look at how the numbers went down, down, down. Or up,
so the
up,
way
up.
The ones that we can watch to see what the issues are and how they affect
see
him.
The
watch
movement.
That.
See movement. I think that's very important. One last thing, and then I'll let you go. One last thing. To me, the best question is the country on the wrong track? Why? If you were running for reelection and 63% in our poll this morning say you're on the wrong track, that's not an encouraging number, and it was much higher.
ABC's Ann Compton, thanks for taking time out to be with us on Newsline PM.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
12:19, Alisa Jaffe in this week for Ken Schramm. So with President Obama and Mitt Romney deadlocked in this race, according to the polls, what does that mean? What do they do next? And who's scrambling behind the scenes? Democratic strategist Kathy Allen is joining us. This has got to be, you know, wild behind the scenes with these two parties.
It is, and it's actually kind of hard, even for us on the inside, to kind of track what's real and what's just bravado. At this point, it sure seems to me that money is not going to be the issue so much as what is it we don't see. I think there's equal amounts of money, despite the fact that you take a look at it and it looks like the Republicans are substantially ahead. What we don't know is all of these independent expenditures, all of the PAC dollars. I think that the whole kind of repertoire here is going to be confusing till the end.
But how can money not make a real difference? Because the Republicans are saying that they beat out the president by raising $35 million than Obama's people did in June.
It's true. And you know, it's going to be funny money till the end because there's so much that's not on the books or so much that's not accumulating. For example, all of the environmental groups, all of the labor unions, all of the different groups that have special interests that happen to be progressive, the anti-gun groups, all of these folks have lots of money that they're putting in on behalf of Obama. The problem is that it's not on the same books that you see everything else. Like, you may know that the environmental groups are going to be supporting Obama in a big way. So you give money to Washington Conservation Voters or the League of Conservation Voters. It doesn't all happen that it's immediately transparent to the rest of us how this money is actually tallied.
So there could be a reversal of fortune that we just don't know about.
Yeah, and there's another thing, really, that Lisa, I got to say that this makes what we call it maddening to be able to try and be telling the truth about what's happening with money. And that is, you also have, besides all these independent expenditures, you have all of these issue ads, you have all of the PACs, the political action committees, but then you also have what is this year the biggest change in politics is how we campaign. And there's no doubt about it, when you have the kind of prowess that the Obama team has, and I've been to the mansion, so to speak, the material mansion of all of the gurus in internet in Chicago, the fact is that they are reaching voters, young voters under the age of 40, much more efficiently than you would ever have imagined. TV is still the predominant medium, but let me just tell you, a lot of votes are going to be gotten online, and they do not cost as much as they used to cost.
That's what I was wondering. How important is this money? If they're turning to the internet, is the money not as important?
Money is important, no doubt about it. TV, in the last, 6 days of the election, there's still going to be about 5 or 6% that are not yet sure what they're going to do or if they're going to vote. And whether they are pulled away from voting it for all because they're just so tired of the negative and the barrage of what's going on, or whether they're inspired as some of the last-minute voting. And they traditionally tend to be younger women, urban, that if they do vote, they vote progressive and they vote Democrat. If they're just so totally overwhelmed by it all, they just say, oh, a pox on all your houses, and they don't vote. But with an election that's likely to be close, it's going to make a difference.
Democratic strategist Kathy Allen with us on Newsline PM. And, you know, we're seeing that about 9 in 10 Republicans back Romney and about 9 in 10 Democrats are supporting President Obama. And very few voters say that they're likely to change their minds before Election Day, which means the shift has got to be to get the get out and vote operation in full swing.
Yep, it's already started. And that's where, you know, obviously if you get the get out to vote effort in a way, and I got to tell you that most people are predicting that a lot of the last minute votes will be in those younger voters who are registered and are actually people that you reach on Facebook, that you reach online. Yes, the traditional voters are the ones that already know by primary election day who they're voting for in the general for president. But when it comes to the basics of, you know, how are we going to actually see all those votes kind of materialize? There are folks of color that are sometimes the last to register. There are also lots of younger voters who are among the last to register. And there are also people who are, in many cases, urban, suburban, who just have never been registered before. If those people get registered, then it makes for an increase in the amount of people voting. What you should know is that Washington State is likely to be the state in the country that has not only the largest number of people who are registered also voting, but the largest number of young people under the age of 35 voting, both of which are likely to be records for Washington State this year.
Kathy Allen, Democratic strategist. Time now for a check on traffic.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Alisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm. And no, it's not your imagination. Traffic is getting worse. New report out today says Seattle's traffic delays are getting worse faster than in any major city in North America. This is according to TomTom Traffic Data Company, and now they are ranking Seattle number 4 for the most congested. Just a year ago, we were number 12. Now we're number 4 a year later. The average Seattle driver wastes about 35 minutes in slowdowns for every hour you're on the road. And that's during the commute periods. And morning commute times are 48% longer than in free-flowing traffic, while afternoon commutes take about 70% longer. So what a waste of time being stuck in traffic. And get ready for tomorrow morning, because Wednesday mornings and Friday afternoons, as you probably know, are the worst times to travel. Ahead of us, Los Angeles, Vancouver, and Miami. What's sort of weird about this list, though? New York didn't make the list. So a little skeptical about this list. We've got a lot more coming up.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Good afternoon, Alisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm this week. There's a King County councilman trying to figure out how much money is being spent on the Soto Arena project. How much do you think they're putting in for the NBA and NHL arena down by the other arenas in town? Well, Councilman Pete von Reichbauer has asked the prosecutor's office to investigate how much this is costing in legal fees for attorneys in the prosecutor's office and for outside counsel, because a lot of people are checking into this deal, making sure there aren't any lawsuits that are going to come back and slap them in the face. And so Reichbauer says he plans to check with the city of Seattle soon on all the same issues in the city. And he said the information would help him if he decides on whether he's going to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down to the proposed deal. And Reichbauer isn't the only one with questions. And a lot of people have questions, and you're invited to ask your questions about the proposed arena tonight. And the King County Council member Bob Ferguson is teaming up with Seattle City Council member Mike O'Brien to host this town hall meeting at North Seattle Community College Cafeteria. That's on College Way North in Seattle. That's going to start at 7 o'clock tonight, but we couldn't wait. We wanted to get King County Councilman Bob Ferguson with us on the line this afternoon. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
What's made you say, we better hold a town hall? How many calls are you getting into the council chambers?
Oh, well, we get plenty of calls, and as you might imagine, literally thousands of emails on the subject. But the reason for doing the town hall is pretty straightforward. I do many town halls as a King County Council member. In fact, I've done them in the past with Councilmember O'Brien. But this is one of the few times I've had a town hall meeting on one specific topic. Normally, it's open to any subject that the county deals with. But because of the intense interest in the proposal on the arena, it seemed natural to me and Councilmember O'Brien to have a town hall meeting where folks can come and ask questions about the proposal and get answers from their elected officials.
What are some of the concerns when you're hearing from constituents, voters, everybody wanting to know about this proposal?
Sure. So on the county side, the feedback comes in many different forms. I'd say, number one, there's a big interest in protection for taxpayers. On the bonding capacity that the county is proposing to put forward on this, up to $80 million of bonding capacity, there's a big interest that I share of making sure that if we go forward with this proposal, that we do so in a way that protects taxpayers as much as we possibly can. That's been a big subject. Another one, as I suspect you know, the transportation issues, specifically with the port, which is a big economic driver for our region, to make sure that, again, if a proposal goes forward, that does so in a way that is sensitive to those challenges on transportation and addresses those in a meaningful way. So there are others as well, but those are two issues that have come out that I think are have been particularly important.
And Bob, we were talking yesterday about the port issues, and the port issues, there's nothing new. There are problems there, and those problems are going to be there whether you have a new arena or not. I mean, that's almost a whole nother town hall, isn't it?
I mean, that's actually a really good point. I think that's exactly right. However, we do have an opportunity here in analyzing this proposal to make sure we get good information about potential impacts on any proposal we may go forward with. So it's important to make these decisions not in a vacuum, but taking into account of all the different interests that are at stake. And a key one from my perspective, of course, is the port. There may be mitigation that can be done on the transportation side, but it's important we do a careful analysis of those impacts before the city or the county council take their upcoming votes.
Bob Ferguson with the King County Council. You lean in one way or another, Bob?
Well, I've not made a decision as a starting point. Number two, I come at this as someone who wants to see if we can make a deal happen that meets the criteria that I've laid out, making sure we protect taxpayers, address issues related to the port, and other issues as well. But it's a complex proposal, so we're taking the time to have a lengthy process on this. We have some independent analysis going forward as well. That'll be reported back to the county council. And tonight's a good opportunity to hear from the public. And this is different than a public hearing. You know, as you know, at a public hearing, a citizen can go up for 1 or 2 minutes and just say what they want to say, but there's not the feedback from the elected officials. It's just a statement. A town meeting tonight, it's a chance for folks to ask questions directly to me and the Councilman O'Brien, and our job is to answer those questions to the best of our ability. So it's a different format tonight, and frankly, it's the first and perhaps the only such format we'll see for this proposal. So it's a good opportunity for citizens to weigh in and have their questions asked and answered.
And we're going to open up our lines in just a moment and get some of those people asking the questions so we can get the questions out there. 206-421-1000, 206-421-1000, if you've got some questions about the proposed arena. Let me ask you a question. When somebody says, how are you going to protect me? I'm a taxpayer. I'm worried that I'm going to get, you know, screwed over by this deal.
Absolutely. So what the county's looking at doing, as well as the city, is utilizing its bonding capacity. So it's not, for example, as past proposals we had, like one that I did not support for the last arena with Clay Bennett, was increasing sales taxes, restaurant taxes. I did not support that because that's a true increase in taxes. So one thing we're looking at is protecting that bonding capacity for the county and the city. That involves making sure there's reserve accounts that the arena company, the private investors, must have in place to, again, protect taxpayers in case they fall behind in rent payments. They have a reserve fund that is a backfill in case they fall behind.
Break that down a little more for me when you're talking about the bonding, since I don't, you know, I don't know enough about it, and I just maybe I was just down at the arena and had a few too many big beers. Okay, so what are you talking about?
So think of it this way: the bonding capacity is, and this isn't a precise term, but think of it as a loan essentially. That we're using our bonding capacity. The county and city can, because we have a AAA bond rating, highest of any government in the state, we can borrow for construction at very low interest rates. So the county, under this deal, the proposal is for the county to use its bonding capacity for the development construction of the arena. That gets paid back over the course of the lease, paid back by rent, and paid back by taxes specifically generated by the arena and users of the arena. And that's an important point, that those are only folks who are utilizing the arena. So we're paid back each year, $15 million annually, over the course of the lease. So at the end of the 30 years, the county and city own the land and the arena. So it's essentially a loan, for lack of a better term, that is paid back by the private investor group.
How much will it cost me?
So if under the analysis so far, on the county side, it literally is pennies for a medium-priced home. It's almost no tax impact at all. It literally is pennies. On the city side, I believe the last analysis I saw from the city side, and again, I'm not on the city council, but I believe for a medium-priced home, it was $2 or $3 per year for a medium-priced home. So there's not a separate tax like there was for past stadium proposals. This one is different. There's not a separate tax like a sales tax or a restaurant tax that everybody pays in our county that would go to the arena. In fact, it's quite the opposite, that the arena owners have to pay the rent, and they can utilize taxes generated by the arena, admissions tax, for example, on tickets that gets paid back to the city and the county to pay back that lease.
And do you guys trust Chris Hansen, the hedge fund manager behind this, and his team of supporters?
Sure. So the way I look at this is the old trust but verify, right? So obviously I've met with Chris Hansen one-on-one. He's presented to the county council and the city council. He's been very good about answering any and all questions from elected officials and the media. So our job as elected officials is to make sure we're working closely with our staff and getting independent analysis from experts in the field of stadium and arena deals, for example, to make sure that we are carefully analyzing the proposal and putting in the safeguards for taxpayers that we're talking about. So that's just a lengthy process. So from my standpoint, I think Chris Hansen has put together a proposal that by any standard compared to other arenas is a very good one. The question is whether or not, as elected officials and a community, we think it makes sense to have this public-private partnership for this arena. That's the question that's really before the county and the city at this time.
So can you stick around, Bob? I know you've got a busy schedule, and we can always call you back in just a minute or two, but we want to open our phone lines, 206-421-1000, 206-421-1000, and let people ask questions. And if they can't make it tonight, could you maybe answer some of their questions?
I will give it my best shot.
Oh, we really appreciate that, because it's time for us now to check on traffic.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
There's been a lot of dissecting and discussing when it comes to the possibility of a new Soto arena, and a lot of those questions can be answered tonight if you attend the town hall being held by King County Councilmember Bob Ferguson and Seattle City Councilmember Mike O'Brien. And we've got Bob on the line with us, and we're taking your calls 206-421-1000, 206-421-1000. You got the question? Bob will hopefully have the answer. And Bob, let's take a call from Ben in Tacoma. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. What's your question for our councilman?
Well, I would be first in line for season tickets if Seattle were to attract an NHL team. And I'm wondering where in the list of priorities that falls, because I've been following this pretty closely but haven't really seen anything too encouraging about NHL. Everyone keeps talking about NBA, and I want to know what the possibility of that is.
Bob, Ben, the hockey guy, wants to know what are the odds of getting an NHL team?
Absolutely. I can't speak to the odds, but I can tell you that the proposal contemplates both NBA and NHL, National Hockey League, of course. And so that really would be a decision up to Chris Hansen and the investment group on whether or not and if an opportunity presents itself to bring the NHL to Seattle. So what I can say is that the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, which is the document that both the City Council and County Council are examining right now, this is the agreement between the city, the county, and Chris Hansen, that contemplates a bonding capacity from the county and the city that would include the potential for NHL. So if we go forward with this MOU, and that allows for the possibility of NHL to come forward. Now, the city and county, of course, would not be the ones at that point to try and make the NHL come to Seattle. Rather, the investment group, private investors, would be the one trying to reach out and find an NHL team or start an NHL team here for Seattle. So what I can say is, again, the agreement contemplates that, allows for that possibility, but it'd be up to others to actually make that happen.
But let me ask a follow-up. So if Chris Hansen and his guys, they clinch a deal with an NBA team, mm-hmm. and they get that, they can still get the arena. It doesn't mean they can't get it if they don't get an NHL team.
That's exactly right. And actually, early on in this process, there was a little bit of information that wasn't quite right. It seemed to be there were some reports that we needed both NBA and NHL.
Right, that's what I thought. Happened.
Yes, and I'm not quite sure how that got out there. The reality is actually, Lisa, that NBA would be happening, and the potential's there for the NHL. But if an NHL team doesn't happen the next couple of years, that doesn't preclude an arena from going forward, doesn't preclude NHL from happening down the road, but it's not mandatory for the arena to be constructed.
Okay, let me pretend I'm Ken Schramm for a second, okay?
Sure.
We got all these negative Nellies sitting here and they're whining about how much traffic there's going to be down at the port, and there's already traffic problems, and complaining about the taxes when it's just a few pennies, maybe a dollar or two. But why don't we talk about the good? Why don't we talk about what's in the crystal ball, as Schramm might say, and the economy and the jobs and what this could bring? Have you looked into that?
Absolutely. First of all, the negative Nellies, I don't view it that way. I think folks have legitimate concerns, and those views should be heard, and we should be responsive to those, just as an initial starting point. But number two, yes, I do believe there are some obvious positives that potentially come from an arena, and that's a range. You mentioned, for example, just the construction of the arena itself and the construction jobs. I don't think your listeners need to be told how bad things are right now for the construction industry and mm-hmm. workers. Folks with families who are out of work right now are ready to go to work, and obviously construction of an arena and this entire development construction would bring many jobs from that standpoint. There's also, pro sports franchises are a part of the fabric of our community, whether you're a Sounders fan or a Seahawks fan, whatever it might be. There is a community aspect to that I think has value to our community. As a kid growing up here in Seattle, I'm a native of Seattle. I went to Sonic games all through the 70s as a kid. And as a kid, it was a big part of my upbringing. I went to Lenny Wilkins basketball camp, and I have very fond memories of those times.
Oh, you went during the good years, didn't you?
I went during the good years, exactly. Yes. Right. But I do think it is important that sports is a part of our community. Hey, whether it's the opera, we have all sorts of arts and heritage and community aspects that makes Seattle and King County a great place to live, and I think professional sports has a role there. So I think there's also benefit from that standpoint.
King County Councilman Bob Ferguson, one last question before we check on traffic. What's the biggest thing standing in Chris Hansen's way?
In terms of trying to get this move forward on the
yes,
city
sir.
And the county?
Yes, sir.
Boy, the biggest thing, I'm not sure it'd be easy to describe just one thing. I think overall what I would say is that this is a significant proposal, one of the most important proposals before the county and the city that we'll see this year, and it's complicated. And there are many competing needs and issues that need to be sorted out. We've discussed many of those here today. That's just a complicated process, and that takes time to make sure we protect taxpayers and make sure we take care of jobs from the port and others as well. So I think just the biggest thing is it's a complicated process, and it's a complicated deal, and we need to take the time to make sure we work through it in a thoughtful way.
Hope you have a good turnout tonight. I know it's at North Seattle Community College Cafeteria. That's on College Way North in Seattle at 7 o'clock tonight. King County Council Member Bob Ferguson teaming up with Seattle City Council Member Mike O'Brien holding a town hall meeting. And you can ask all the questions you want starting at 7 o'clock tonight. But hopefully Mr. Ferguson addressed some of your questions right now. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Coming up, why you need to stand up if you want to live longer. But first, there's a plan that allow taller buildings in Seattle that isn't sitting well with some people. The city is considering changing the maximum height of buildings in certain neighborhoods as long as they're built green. Well, residents say if you got taller buildings, it could mean people will lose their views. They'll add to long shadows in the winter months when sunshine is already scarce. But so far, no taller buildings have been approved for construction.